Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here with my old friend in hockey, Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing?
Good. I'm glad I didn't go to that game, as that was not a good game at all, Bruce. So let's the Oilers lost 4-1. They were never really in that game from the about 30 seconds in or whatever. let's do the two good things, two bad things, and two numbers podcast. What was your good thing?
Good thing for me is I didn't have to pay to watch it. Just kind of riffing off what you just said there. It was just, this was one of those games where the team just never showed until way, way, way too late in the day. And it's just not acceptable. I mean, how can you find much good to say about that game? So I'm going to turn that on its head and say the people who did pay to watch that game got ripped off. And it's not acceptable, Edmonton Oilers. That was just not a worthwhile show put on in front of the home faithful.
So even when the Oilers were a good team in 2016-17, they would have the odd stinker game. And it would be about 1 in 10 games. So This... I don't recall. Have we had a real stinker yet this year? Is this the first?
Well,
you are going to get them, Bruce. If we're completely fair to the coach and the team and everybody.
I was making no excuses for him, but I was explaining the last game that the schedule was probably catching up to him, and you know they lost those three games on the East Coast there in a row, 5-2, 4-2, 4-1, I think it was. But then they got a couple days off. They got a full day to practice yesterday. And I don't know what they were practicing yesterday because none of it was in evidence on the ice tonight. The team was not ready to start the game. They couldn't get a save. They couldn't get a defensive play. They couldn't get a decent chance at the offensive end. The special teams sucked. Like, there really was nothing good to say about most of that game.
Okay, I got a good thing, though. Okay. Because I think Zach Cassian did stand out as a good thing. So I had the Oilers were outchanced 8-7 in grade A chances. Zach Cassian, all on his own, he had 3 grade A chance shots on net. Now you'll have to go over them. I think they were all shots, but this is my initial take on it. And he was also agitating, hitting, hustling. I wish we could see that Zach Cassian. So the bad thing is we don't always see that Zach Cassian, especially since he got his new contract. He became a lot more complacent, it struck me. And he's now on another contract run, of course. But
he's still got a year and almost 2 years to go. But
Did he get a 3-year? Isn't this the last year, Bruce?
3-year deal. This is the second year of a 3-year pact.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So anyway, he did play good tonight. I'll give you that. Other than the inexplicable drop pass he made on a partial breakaway, just before the Oilers actually did score, to be fair. But but I'll say the same thing about this that I used to say about Matt Hendricks. And I tell you, David, there used to be 2 or 3 games every year where I would give Matt Hendricks the highest grade on the Oilers because he would. In Hendricks' case, at least, he would always be given a good effort, good game or bad, by the team. And I tell her what, however many games I gave Hendricks the top grade on the team, it was usually a 6 when nobody else even got past 5. And the Oilers' record in those games, collective record, was 0 and whatever. Like any time that Matt Hendricks was the best player that the Oilers had that night, they had no chance winning that game because it just meant their best players hadn't played well at all. Because anyway,
I just had to
case tonight.
Yeah. I was so depressed by what you said about Zach Cassian's contract that I had to go to Cap Friendly and look at it. And you are exactly
1.95 million.
Oh,
for
God.
Another 147 games.
No wonder they can't move him. Because you'd think, like, if it was in the last year of his deal, you'd think, because he does provide an element.
He played like this half the time. You know, I mean, you'd like a guy that play that way all the time, but those guys are very few. But, I mean, in Cassian's case, I would say he's had, what, 2, maybe 3 good games all year?
Yeah.
Where he's been a positive. Some games he's been just sort of, nothing happens on his watch, positive or negative. But it's a rare game where he really stands out. But tonight he stood out for good and bad reasons. He played well, but his teammates really didn't put up a lot of competition on that front.
What is your bad thing, Bruce?
Well, you know, I'm going to go to the netminder, starting netminder, Cam Talbot. And, you know, Cam's been, he's been in a bit of a funk again in November, and this is the third time in 4 years since he's been in Edmonton that he's had a so-so October and then a pretty not good November. The 1 year exception obviously was 16-17, the playoff year, when he was outstanding for basically that whole year. But he's not been outstanding or anywhere close. And tonight I thought he was frankly at fault on all three of the goals that he allowed.
You did. I only had him tagged on one so far, so mm-hmm. you'll see my I'm looking forward to your review of it. So let's go through the three. Why
The first one was a backhand from a low angle that he punted the rebound out into the slot.
Oh, and I actually did have him on that.
He didn't get any help on that one because McDavid didn't pick up the goal scorer, which was Rantanen. But the fact is, even Rantanen's shot on the rebound was a dribbler that could have been stopped, and somehow it got under Talbot's pad and dribbled into the net. So that was the first one. The second one was a screenshot from the top of the circle. And Talbot, I mean, he may not even have seen that shot, but the fact remains that it was a shot from outside that was a good foot inside the short side post. And the goalie's job, if he can't see the shot, is to be somewhere in position to at least fill the net. And I don't know where he went because, like I say, it wasn't like the guy picked the corner or did the Michael Granlund thing where he put it in a puck-sized hole. Like, there should be no hole at all, a foot inside the post.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, and it went right through him and into the net. And then the third goal was the one where he couldn't cover the short side post and the guy jammed away and it trickled up and over his body and dribbled down about an inch over the goal. I mean, that's kind of unlucky. It wasn't his night. But, man, we need a save once in a while. And, I mean, how many games this four-game losing streak and 4 games out of four, we've been saying the other team got better goaltending than Edmonton got.
This was my rant last game, Bruce, as you might recall. Talbot did not make a save, and he again, and it was, how many times have we had this where the first chance, the chance? Just endless last year, and now we're having it again. And Bruce, I don't know, like, and I was thinking this before the game, I wasn't on Twitter, so I don't have a record of me saying this, but I couldn't believe it before the game when I saw Talbot was starting, honestly. Like, why wouldn't you have started Koskinen in that game? Talbot just came off a game where he didn't make a save. He didn't look good. Koskinen has looked better recently. He was brought in to challenge for the number one job. Mm-hmm. He's been the better goalie this year. Why wasn't Koskinen playing? I would have played. It was kind of befuddling to me. Mm-hmm. That's the case. But I wasn't surprised because this is McClellan's MO, right, to go with vets and faves. Or what is it that... Supernova says, vets and pets. That is such a brutal comment, but because it has such an element of truth to it. But
every time I take my pet to the vet, I wind up with a nasty bill.
So we can, you know, last year, of course, it came up constantly with McClellan, and that's why we have some people like me have baggage this year with the vets and pets. But, and we also recall from last year, Talbot complaining that he was pulled early in one game, early in the year, and it wrecked his confidence. And there was all this talk early in the year how, like, one or two bad games wrecked the Oilers for the year. I just thought that was the most bogus thing I heard all year long from both McClellan and from, I think, from Talbot.
He got pulled because he weren't good enough, so be better. You know,
yeah.
It's pro game, right? It's heartless. It's you know. Yeah, and when the coach does throw you a bone and show confidence in him, I mean, it would help to repay some of it. And leaking in the very first chance, 26 seconds into the bloody game, and they never got back on level terms for the whole rest of the night. I mean, sorry.
All right, so this leads into my bad thing, Bruce, which was the forwards on the back check this game. I mean, three of the four goals, every even strength goal. McDavid, where, you know, Connor McDavid gets tons of praise from us, but on that first goal, he was the main culprit. Mm-hmm. He just got beat in the slot. Someone outworked him, and they scored a goal because of his failing. On the second goal, it's Drake Kajula, you know, not getting back and covering that guy. There was a screen by Garrison and Benning allowed the pass, but, you know, Kajula's out of position. He's not on that guy. He allows that shot. And then on the fourth goal that was on Koskinen, Chiasson allowed the pass from the boards, and Reeder was slow on the back check. Reeder
couldn't catch up to Barry. Just
stop. Reeder stopped skating, Bruce. And I don't know. This is very typical. Like, guys catch right up to the guy, but instead of getting position, keep on skating, get position, they kind of start gliding. Well, the other guy, you see it. I don't quite understand it. It must be something about human nature.
Mark Messier used to do that, David. It's been going on for decades.
Yeah, it's an interesting foible of players. So anyway, Reeder did that. And then there were other examples. Draisaitl did it. Draisaitl, I thought, was particularly bad in terms of his hustle level tonight. And then he got moved up to McDavid's line for some reason, rewarded for his lack of hustle.
Pets and Vets.
Yeah, Pets and Vets. And, you know, anyway. Yeah,
he could have even worse for the first two periods. Like, he had, after two periods, his only stats were two shot attempts that were both blocked, two giveaways, and nothing that was positive, like no hits, no shots, no takeaways, no nothing, and a minus one, which was pretty richly deserved at that point. And then he wound up on the first line. And I mean, I like Draisaitl plenty, but tonight he had a real bad game.
And yeah, he was he was rancid butter. All right, Bruce, I don't even know what that means. Okay, what's your number?
Well, I'm going to go back to something that I talked about in glowing terms here back in the good old days last week when the Oilers were 8-4-1. And I talked about how game after game they blocked way more shots than the other guys. And I said that, you know, that's not the be-all and end-all stat, but sometimes it tells you something. And here's what tonight's tells me. Tonight the Oilers got two blocked shots from Chris Russell and three from Adam Larson. And then zero from every other player on the team for a net total of five for the team.
Wow.
Five block shots tonight. Whereas Colorado had 12 different players contribute a total of 19 block shots in this game. And to me, the message that's in there is that Colorado was quite simply, the simplistic way to put it is they wanted it more. They were paying the price. They were getting in the lanes defensively. They were doing stuff to help out the goalie. And the Oilers really weren't. I mean, other than those two defensive mainstays I listed at the top, not one for the entire rest of the team. And so even though Edmonton had way more shot attempts than Colorado in this game, 52-40, the shots were actually in favor of Colorado by one, 28-27, because Edmonton wasn't getting their shots through. And virtually all of the Colorado attempts, if they tried to shoot the puck, it wound up being a shot on net because nobody was getting in the way of it. Nobody was forcing them to shoot wide. You know, it was when they did have a shot, it was a good look oftentimes.
All right. So, Bruce, in his first, my number is this. In his first, we've had 16 games, right? Mm-hmm. Connor McDavid in those first 16 games, I'm just adding this up now, 51. He was in on 51 major contributions to grade A scoring chances, and he was in on 28. So that's 79 major contributions to grade A scoring chances in his first 16 games. Mm-hmm. McDavid was in on just one this game. And that came late in the third period where he helped set up Draisaitl on that amazing power play chance. But and that Ty Ratty really worked hard on that one. He won that board battle and got that to McDavid. And just a beautiful passing play.
Varlamov, that was the kind of goalie robbery that we haven't been seeing at Edmonton's end of the ice.
But it's a
big stop, you know.
So McDavid is obviously a fantastic player, but he can't be Captain Fantastic every single night, I guess.
He's struggling a bit lately, in my view.
Yeah, you're right. He's slowing down a bit. And he's getting about five great major contributions to grade A chances per game and one tonight. So not nearly his A game. And that line, I thought Nugent Hopkins looked weak as well. He was making just wasn't sharp and was turning over the puck a lot. So sharp, really. I don't know what we're going to see with that line. You know, I would like, and I wrote a post on this, and we talked about this a bit. I would like to see more skill in the Oilers lineup and to drop. And I know people thought, you know, we're all raving about the fourth line, but I'm not impressed with Brodziak's play this year. I think you should go with either Lucic or Cassian, one or the other in the lineup, and get a more skill in that lineup, Bruce, because they're not creating enough goals. They're not scoring enough. You need more skill. And their defense, they sent Bouchard down. I wasn't, you know, it was probably the right move. They weren't playing him. He was one other guy other than Klefbom that was moving the puck well. They have some, they're not great defensively moving the puck. They're in, you know, probably the bottom rung of teams in terms of the defensemen moving the puck. So they need some forwards who can get it done. And you can't go, I don't think you can go with this kind of heavy lineup where you have Kyra, Cassian, Lucic. Like, these are Brodziak. Those are four guys who are too slow for the modern NHL. So maybe have two of them in your lineup any one night. But I think it's time to inject some speed in the Oilers roster, and I'm glad Marody's up. He's not a particularly fast player, but he's a highly skilled player. And maybe one other young guy from the farm, whoever's killing it down there, Hebig's doing well. So that's what I would like to see. And I just think it's too conservative an approach. And we're seeing it on the scoreboard.
Yeah, well, we've been seeing a bunch of three-goal losses, you know.
Yeah.
Three in a row by three goals after a two-goal loss. So that's not just a four-game losing streak, but no Bettman points and really no competitive games. Like, they were some of them, the third goal in the margin was an empty netter, but the Oilers lost by two clear goals four games in a row.
I don't think this lineup is skilled enough right now. I think they're lacking skill, and it's time to bring in some more skilled players and play them. And see if that works. I mean, what is Brodziak? He's -7 on the fourth line, and he's been responsible for many of those goals against. So, sorry.
Well, Brodziak and Cassian got ripped for another power play goal.
They did.
So that's five power play goals they've given up in 17 games at, what, 1 to 2 minutes per game. And at even strength, Brodziak's been on the ice for, I think it's 11 goals against. That's 16 goals that he's been on for in 17 games. Like, that's obviously a goal a game, basically. And, of course, I mean, shorthanded, it's not all on the one player. But if the guy's brought in here to be a solid defensive player and penalty killer, you've got to be keeping the puck out of your net in both situations to some extent.
Yeah, I didn't think they were at blame on that particular goal against. But I thought it was more on Talbot, yeah. And Larson might have got over there, maybe Klefbom. But I just think it's the mix of players. They're too plodding, the Oilers. They've got a couple really fast, dynamic players, but otherwise they're too pedestrian, too plodding, and it's time to bring in more skill into that lineup. I mean, I know it probably made sense to send down Puljujärvi and Yamamoto, but call up some other. They got Hebig, they have Benson, they've got Marody. Let's get some more skill in this lineup, because one goal a game isn't going to cut it. So, well, let's leave it there, Bruce.
They're not really counterattacking with speed, are they?
They are not. Let's leave it. I mean, and I like Chiasson and Ratty and these guys. Kajula's defense is still suspect. But anyway, Bruce, when do they play next?
They play the Habs. I think it's Tuesday night, isn't it?
That's a must win.
And then they play two games on the weekend, Saturday, Sunday, where they play a road game in Calgary on Saturday, and then they play 6 o'clock right after on the Sunday. So the sort of the shortest turnaround time that's permissible in the CBA, 22 hours. So we'll see how that goes. But they've just got to be better. I mean, against Montreal, I mean, if they don't come out right from the beginning of the game, what's going on? Like, I had heard a couple of people suggesting this was kind of a coach killer kind of game. And, you know, you see that, it really makes you wonder a little bit. The team not ready to play and really didn't get just really emotionally or involved in the game. There's not enough of them. A few did, but the sense of team is just, it's not there right now.
Yeah, four losses in a row in a team that's got to make the playoffs this year and a team that needs to get on the right track early. The truth is McClellan is, he's on the bubble, and there's no other way to frame it. And we'll see what happens in this next couple of weeks. I mean, he's got to get it going. They got to have a solid winning record. And if they don't, it's time to move on, get a different coach. Yeah, so we'll see what happens.
I got exasperated enough that I looked it up in mid game, and the last two coaches that Edmonton Oilers fired during the season were
Bugsy Watson.
The last two were Dallas Eakins in 2014 after the Henrik Lundqvist signature save game. Remember when Lundqvist laughed at the Oilers because they were so weak? And the previous coach to get fired in midseason was George Burnett during the 1995 lockout when Shane Corson and Jason Arnott got into a fight over who got the credit for an assist while the team was theoretically striving for a playoff berth. And that one came completely off the rails. So it's not something the organization generally does, is the point here. So usually if a coach starts the year, he's going to end the year. He might be gone in the off season, but the general rule of thumb has been they stick with the guy for the whole season. So any talk of changing coaches mid-season should take into account that's not really the Oiler way.
Well, that's the way of many a successful franchise, including the Pittsburgh Penguins a few years ago.
Twice they did it.
Penguins. Yeah, no, it's listen. They will do it this year, I think. And if this team doesn't have a real 500 record and isn't in the playoff spot by December 1st, we're going to see a coaching change. All right. Thanks, Bruce.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.